Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by a very special guest here with us today. Filmmaker, producer, director Patricia Marcoccia is here today to talk about her new film, Shut 'Em Down, The Rise of Jordan Peterson. I would imagine ears have already perked up, Patricia. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So how about Bill C-16? The film airs in November on CBC. It's going to exist there for a couple of years, which is amazing. People are going to be able to get out and see it if they live in Canada, that is. Tell us a little bit about what happened here. I understand you had a very intentional project in mind for this film with Jordan Peterson, and kind of were taken off track to some degree. Your concept note had to change.
Yes. So this is how the story goes. So I first learned about Jordan Peterson through his book, Maps of Meaning, The Architecture of Belief. Mm. And this is a long time ago. This is when I was studying psychology as an undergraduate student at McMaster University in around 2004, 2005. I was taking a lot of philosophy classes and just very interested in the big existential questions. And I came upon his book probably just from a random Google search. I don't know exactly.
Okay.
And I found it really interesting because it was all about how it is that we form meaningful worldviews and how we'll do anything to hold on to that worldview. So I found this very interesting. And a few years later, I started to notice some of his lectures on TVO about this book, as well as later he would do various TV appearances. But a lot of his lectures focused on moral topics, the necessity of virtue, good right. and evil, things like this. So I sustained this interest over the years. And a friend of mine who was taking some of the classes at the University of Toronto, I went into some classes with her to his classes. So, you know, I always had this interest. There was always just something that kind of kept bringing me back to this thinking. And that eventually led to an interest in making a documentary about him.
Right.
There was this feeling at the back of my mind that there was just something more that I wanted to understand. And I think part of that was because of, in his introduction to Maps of Meaning, he talks about having had nightmares about the 20th century atrocities of what would lead people to become part of mass genocide. And that's a big part of what motivated him to write the book.
Oh,
and
is, so that, is that right, eh? Okay.
Yeah. And so I just felt very curious that there was an interesting personal story behind that. So in spring 2015, that's when I decided to finally pursue this feeling that wouldn't go away.
Right.
And I moved back to Toronto after having lived on the West Coast for a few years, and I decided to approach him. So I went to a few of his classes, and then after class one day, I went and approached him. And it's funny, always going after his classes, there's always a long lineup of students.
Oh, I bet there is, yeah.
Wanting to ask questions.
I would have been one of those people in those lineups, yeah.
So, you know, I made my way into this lineup and I told him about it. And then I think he suggested that, we could set a meeting like for the following week or something like that, to speak in his office. And, we spoke about it, and then we had another meeting where I could meet his wife. And so, you know, we spoke a few times and I learned about the various things happening in his life. And at that point, that's when I learned about his friendship with a First Nations carver, living on the West Coast. His name is Charles Joseph. And he's part of the Kwakwaka'wakw Nation. And I thought that this was very interesting because Jordan was being adopted into Charles's family.
Hmm.
And he was going to participate in a lot of sacred ceremonies. And I met Charles. And so I decided that that would become the focus of my documentary.
So more of a personal doc almost. What makes this guy up? How would he land at writing a book like Maps of Meaning, digging into his past and so on, and looking for philosophical connections, maybe? Is that?
Yeah. And it's funny. It's sort of, I guess, you know, that was the first shift. Initially, I went in with an interest in his ideas and the personal story that led to those ideas
right.
and that intersection. Then I learned about Charles Joseph. And then, so that was the first shift, because I wanted to follow what was happening there. There was a natural arc to it.
Right.
And in that film, I mean, Charles Joseph plays an equal character in terms of, you know, the amount of weight given. Charles has a deep and fascinating story about his own healing from residential school and how his carvings play a big role in that. So I started working on that film for about a year and a half. And then that's when Jordan published his video series, Professor Against
right.
Political Correctness. And then everything changed.
Yes, yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that's sort of, I would say, and I don't know a ton about Jordan Peterson. I know a little bit. I've certainly read articles, and it's one of those situations where you hear, right, from people who hear from people.
Right.
Have you heard about this guy? And right, yeah. Bill C-16, and I don't even know what that means, you know? And so it's kind of cool in a way, because it does, I hope, force people to go a little deeper into these issues and to hopefully form educated opinions. I mean, at one point in the film, and by the way, congratulations on the film. And very interesting. And I would imagine going to become kind of controversial for some groups, but I understand too, you're hoping to do a longer theatrical release down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, we are. We're hoping to, well, our plan is to finish that by the end of the year so that it can be released by spring.
So what fascinates me about these types of things is I am interested in reasoned and articulate debate. And that's a direct quote from him in the film. Uh-huh. And you include that. I mean, is he also really interested in that, would you say?
If I wasn't as close to witnessing all of this unravel as I was, I would probably be more skeptical about that, as many people are.
Right.
But from what I have seen, yes, I definitely do believe that part of why he released the videos was because he wanted to clarify his thinking about this. And I do think that he's very interested in reasoned debate.
You say the Charles Joseph, and that's fascinating in its own right. I'd love to hear more about that and carving and healing. And I now want to take a conversation offline, because I know a carver who's going through some PTSD-like symptoms and trauma. Anyway, fascinating stuff. So thanks for that. And maybe we can take that offline. But you mentioned that the sacred ceremonies that Jordan was going to be taking a part in. Would you call him a religious man? I mean, is he a man of faith? Does that even play into any of this conversation?
Mm-hmm. If Jordan is a religious
person,
I would say yes, but it's interesting. That's something he has difficulty answering. When people ask him, well, do you believe in God? I'm not even going to attempt to try to paraphrase or you could look that one up online.
Right.
But I would say, yes, he is, but not in a traditional sense,
right.
Even though he's also a traditionalist.
Right.
Like, he has a very particular definition for a lot of, I guess, traditional... it's difficult for me. I'll summarize it as follows. Yes, he is a religious person, but I think you have to kind of go deeper into his ideas to understand what that means
Absolutely. But, and I mean, my favorite line in the last 10 years of my life, maybe longer, and I too have studied philosophy and have a deep love for it, but everything comes with footnotes.
Uh-huh.
You know, how can you ever really answer a question like that simply? It presupposes further questions and questioning and deeper conversation and an open bottle of wine, it seems to me, you know? No, for sure. Point well taken. So you know, it's not clear to me in the film, at least, is for him, at one point he talks about this is a legal thing, and that's why I'm in this position, and this is why I'm speaking out, and free speech, is it legal? I just couldn't help but thinking, yeah, but Jordan, if I was there in the room, isn't this about human rights?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what we're really talking about here? Did you have a lot of footage? I think I read in an article that you have over 110 hours of footage. You must have some pretty interesting insights into what's going on.
Mm-hmm. So is the question whether, like, what I think the issue is, or how he describes what the issue with the law is?
Yeah, I think both, Patricia, to be honest. I mean, if you and I went out, I live in North Oakville. If we went into Toronto today and met Young and Dundas and did a little survey on Jordan Peterson and what his thinking is, as often is the case, people, and I'm not trying to suggest he's misunderstood, but maybe he is, but do people really know what he's trying to get at?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You know?
There's certainly in the essay that I wrote on the CBC Docs POV website, where I describe why I made this film, one of the things I talk about is how his position is misunderstood, I think even by some of his supporters with regards to what he was opposing with Bill C-16. You know, there are, I think, to this day, people who think his opposition comes from him opposing the existence of non-binary people. And I think that's one of the really important things to make clear, that that isn't what it's about. Though I understand why people will have misunderstood that, because this is all really complicated. There were so many, you know, interviews and podcasts and articles written about all of this. It's like this big ball of confusion. It's not like everyone is going to go and make their way analyzing through all of it. You know, I had the opportunity to go through a lot of questioning with him and to, you know, analyze all of this stuff. So I understand where the misinterpretations come from. I think I'm straying away from what your original question was. Question of free speech or human rights, like what is this about?
Free speech and human rights clearly are connected. But at one point, I think in the film, and I'm just trying to find the quote here, but he says something to the effect of, this is about a legal requirement for me, and that's it. Pure, you know, kind of pure and simple, my paraphrase. This is, you know, we're being forced to do something that, you know, which of course then leads to the free speech question and so on.
Yeah. So in terms of what he's opposing, I think that's what he means. What he's opposing is the legal requirement. So let's talk a little bit about Bill C-16.
Yeah.
So coming away from this controversy, a lot of people's understanding of Bill C-16 is that, that's that law that forces you to use pronouns. But, pronouns are just one small part of the law.
Yes.
It's an amendment to existing human rights legislation that's adding two new categories of protection. So, you know, right now in our human rights laws, we have protection on the basis of sex and religion and skin color. And so this is saying we're going to add two new categories of gender identity and gender expression.
Right.
And this is to add protections for people who are trans or gender diverse. So where do pronouns come into this? This is through the policy guidelines that are used to interpret the law. And it's in these policy guidelines that pronouns are mentioned. So in the guidelines, it says, and I'm probably not quoting this exactly off the top of my head, but it essentially says that misgendering may be seen as harassment or discrimination.
Right.
And so from what I can gather based on speaking to many lawyers and lawyers who even have differing interpretations of this, what Bill C-16 is doing is it's giving people the right to be addressed by a gender-neutral pronoun. In the question and answer document by the Human Rights Commission, it says, up until now, it is undecided as to whether someone can insist upon a particular pronoun. So it's undecided. So at this point, it's the right to be addressed by a gender-neutral pronoun. In terms of where this applies, Bill C-16 is a federal law, so it doesn't affect universities. This was actually already in place universities in Ontario, because this is covered under the provincial jurisdiction. So there's a law that's the equivalent of Bill C-16 that was passed in 2012 provincially. So Bill C-16 covers the areas of accommodation and employment and public services that are federal. So that's where this applies. So what Bill C-16, with regards to pronouns, what it's doing is saying that maybe if someone is misgendered, it might be a case of discrimination, and maybe it wouldn't be. And it's up to the courts to decide.
Right.
Someone can file a human rights complaint, and then it would be up to the courts to decide. Now, in analyzing all of this, I hope I'm not going into too much detail. It is complex.
It is complex, and it opens up. To say that it opens a can of worms is an understatement, right?
Yeah. So I think these are some important areas of consideration with regards to that. One is the way discrimination is defined under the Human Rights Commission is that intent isn't necessarily essential in discrimination happening. So if with Bill C-16 and the accompanying policy, it's saying, well, you know, accidentally misgendering someone, that wouldn't be seen as discrimination because it was an accident. But if you're, you know, persistently, consistently misgendering someone, you know, that would be seen as discrimination. I do think that there is a point to being skeptical about that if the definition of discrimination itself doesn't include intent. So I would say that's one area where, okay, I think it's valid to raise a question and a concern about that, as far as I can tell.
So obviously, you know, in the context of a podcast, and we've got 20, 30, 40 minutes to have this conversation, it's a real challenge. But there's a couple things where I want to go. So there's this this legal issue that he has that you clearly bring out in the film, but there's also this human issue, this relational issue, and there was I was struck by this. There was just this spirit of it's unkindness. I'm trying to think of this, like, it just, there was something about his approach, or at least the way you portray him in the film, that that forget about everything else. Isn't this on some, and this is the human rights conversation, right? I mean, Declaration One, right? I mean, this is every sacred text of any religion has some form of the golden rule. Isn't this just about treating others with love and respect? And I feel as if, okay, we got all these arguments, we got the presentations and the podcasts and the articles and the lectures. Fabulous, great. We can go deep on that. We're going to write essays about it for years. But what about just embracing the other? And I mean the other in the best sense of the word. I don't mean that pejoratively. Like, how do we reach out and embrace? And I think for me, somewhere along the line, people are getting lost. Does that make sense? Is that fair?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I appreciate where you're coming from with regards to that. And I think that's why, for me, it was so important to take a human lens in the making of this film, because right now, so much of this is just being discussed in this very, in an issue-based way that's losing, like, okay, what is this rooted in?
Great question. Where does this actually come from? Right.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's I and I guess where I sort of go is, okay, so let's go back to the comment about reason and articulate debate. When I see, I think very little that we do is reasoned and articulate. I mean, I think most of what we end up is in, when we get into conversations, is we don't speak in syllogisms. We don't say if this, then this, therefore this, right? Mm-hmm. It's emotional, and we invade people's space. And even right now, my hands are moving as I'm talking, right? And if you and I were together, there'd be body language and all these sort of layers to the way we argue or the way we have a conversation. So very little of it is about the logic, but it's about the emotion behind it. And I wonder if that's really just blurring the other, blurring the person, getting in the way of actually getting a clear and distinct understanding about what's actually going on here.
It's interesting, because I think the emotion is actually a really important part of the conversation too. Sometimes you'll have people arguing about something, and it's like, on the surface, it's about some rational topic, but beneath the surface, there's something underneath it that's emotional, you know.
I think that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, very little of it's logical,
right?
Most of it is about.
Okay, sorry, I thought you were saying the emotions are getting in the way, but
no, heavens no.
Okay,
just to your point about what's at the root of this, you know, and then you go, oh, gee, is this really about anger? Is this about insecurity? Is this about hatred for others? Is, you know, what's actual? Let's peel back some of those layers and see what we find.
Yeah, and, you know, I would say, from speaking to some of the activists that I spoke with who were in opposition to Jordan, for a lot of them, this wasn't even about Bill C-16. And
right.
I'm not even saying that that's for everyone, because, you know, some people were going into the technical details about that. But what I did find was a pattern of, for people, it was about just not... for a lot of people, they didn't even know who non-binary people were
until
this controversy broke out. And it's like, what a way to even learn about this.
It's through this
understanding of this totalitarian law and all of this fear and, you know, people that are angry and protesting. So a lot of it was just a concern about people developing these fearful associations with, the world is going crazy with 70 different pronouns, when really the majority of people who identify as non-binary will either use their name or the pronoun they, them.
Okay, I have to say, I so love that about the name part of it. I mean, I'm so glad you brought that up. Like, uh-huh. who cares about the pronouns? How about use people's names?
I mean,
I think this is what I mean. Like, for me, this is about love. This is about acceptance. This is about embrace. This is about about similarity through difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, pronouns and language make sense, and they're important, and they can change laws, and they mean, they're pregnant with meaning of various sorts. But yeah, how about just calling the person Bill. Or Sandra, I'm showing my age because I pick like really sort of, you know, not very like modern names, I suppose, or very, my name's David. So there you go. Take it from there. But anyway, yeah. How about just that?
Yeah. So it's like, okay, there's this conversation about pronouns, and on the one hand, where it's being articulated from, on one side is just simply about, you know, acknowledging that for some people's identities, they don't fit into the categories of male and female in a neat way. And then on the other side, you know, there's this conversation about, well, I'm being forced to have to use these words.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, it's like they're just, you know, weren't even meeting at the same place to have a proper conversation.
One of the things, I think it was near the beginning of the film, I think Jordan Peterson uses the phrase left-wing authoritarian language. And I just thought, oh, no wonder nobody likes you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if obviously lots of people like the guy and are huge supporters. He's selling all kinds of books and doing all kinds of things. But it polarizes things right out of the gate.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that, I think for me, that's obviously there's some really sensitive things here and issues going on. And I think it's marvelous that you're continuing the conversation in a new way, and I hope in a fresh way.
Thank
and it's going to get people to go a bit deeper on both sides and find some mutual ground. But yeah, the polarization of this stuff just makes me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't we have more in common?
Well,
maybe I'm being too hopeful and too
idealistic.
There's
so many things to say about this.
Yeah.
There's an article that just came out in, I think it was Time Magazine.
Okay.
That's called There's Nothing Virtuous About Finding Common Ground.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Going to have to look that up.
So I think a common conversation that's happening right now on the political left, and, you know, I've always identified left of center politically. I think there's this conversation happening around, before, I think it used to be seen as ethical for a journalist to try to be balanced. But now, like, there's this meme, I keep talking about this, going around online that says, if someone says it's raining outside and someone says it's not raining outside, a journalist's job is to look outside and see if it's actually raining or not. It's not to give an equal balance to both of those opinions.
Fair enough. Yep.
So I, of course, understand.
Especially if they're a meteorologist.
Gosh. So I understand this perspective and where it's coming from. And, people have been talking about, well, you know, is this a balanced film? And, you know, some people think that's a good thing if it is balanced. And other people think it's, I see a red flag if you're making it a balanced film. So I think, you know, it's one thing to be digging into facts and finding the accuracy of facts. It's another to, the way that I found the most responsible approach to take in making of this film was to try to deeply understand the differing worldviews and where people from different perspectives and vantage points were coming from, and what was at stake for them.
Right.
And to articulate that. And that's something different from simply being balanced. It's something that I'm still thinking through, and part of the structure of the film is to even call into question, I don't want to spoil it. So for you that's seen the film, I think you might know what I mean with the second last scene. It sort of calls into question a little bit, at least for me. Well, so what is the role of a filmmaker,
right.
even in the framing of this film?
Sure.
So I think that's one of the other things that I do want to be talking about in this, because that's something I considered a lot, so much, in the making of this film. What is the responsible way for me to make this film?
Well, for me, if this helps in any way, I mean, I see great film as they work on so many levels. And if we can step into a theater or turn on our television or whatever it is and engage as if it's a conversation, and I don't know that happens when people watch film all the time, but it's certainly mm-hmm. That's my hope so. place that I go to, that it's going to create a bit more dialogue, that it's going to raise more questions than it answers, so that mm-hmm. you will get involved in reasoned and articulate debate, and you'll avoid these polarizations, this attempt at just saying, oh, well, these massive sweeping generalizations. I think that's the role of a filmmaker. It's the role of a journalist and an artist, and frankly, a human being. That's mm-hmm. role. It's the role of a good parent, isn't it? A great teacher, and mm-hmm. and so on. Hey, there's a great shot. You mentioned shot in the role of filmmaker. It does kind of look like you're shot from behind. I think he's into a crucifix pose of some kind,
uh-huh,
and then you cut to a cross, I think. So,
talk about those religious undertones.
That's right. Not so subtle, right? here's the question. Is mm-hmm. there a danger? Maps of Meaning, don't know a lot about his earlier work, but from what I've mm-hmm. read, it was quite significant and had quite an impact on many, many people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have sort of this, I don't know, like a fallacy of equivocation going on here? Because he was this recognized intellectual over here, well, mm-hmm. everything he says must be true, kind of a thing, or it must be mm-hmm. valid. So you end up with a very dangerous rhetorical and hyperbolic kind of really powerful position to be in, because, well, I said that before and I was recognized for that, so therefore I must be, heading in the right direction. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, are you talking about sort of the responsibility that he yeah. has in what he's saying, because he's now become a person of so much influence?
Yeah, the responsibility he has himself. But I think as we look as we watch the film, as we have conversations, read his books and his essays and so on, say, well, hang on a minute here. Let's be a little more careful. Let's be careful and let's go a bit deeper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, certainly with ideas being talked about, it's always, question everything, mm-hmm. think it through and think
Agreed.
About it for yourself and read and go deeper. Absolutely. All of that. In a topic like this, I think it's hard not to, because there's so much questioning and opposition. And I suppose that's one of the good things about it. You're less likely to be taking things at face value because there's so much questioning
right.
happening. So it kind of forces you to have to, what is this person saying? What is this person saying? I'm going to have to dig into it and think it through for myself.
Were you, sadly, we're going to have to wrap up our conversation, and I think we're going to need to do a part two when the theatrical comes out. What did you learn? You must have learned tons, but what were some of the big surprises for you? I have to say, one of the scenes you shot there where he gets a little angry, and I think that's an understatement, was a bit of a surprise for me.
Which scene?
The free speech rally. I just, how we have to remain civil. It just,
right.
I couldn't but help but laugh out loud.
I see. Yeah, it's funny. That scene does strike a lot of people. Though at the same time, at that point, the microphone isn't working, so he does have to yell.
And he's quite upset at this point. It's pretty. It's pretty clear. Yeah.
So what did I learn, or what surprised me? Oh gosh. when he published the initial series of videos, Professor Against Political Correctness, that surprised me. I didn't know that that was coming.
Right.
And actually that summer, I had sort of been a bit more distant from the project because I think as many filmmakers starting out, I mean, it was self-funded. So I was doing other commercial work to try to fund it. And so there was something significant that we had filmed in the spring. And in the summer, I had taken a bit of a step back as I was kind of reviewing and figuring out how this was going to come together, as well as doing other projects. So when this video series came out, it surprised me as much as it surprised everyone else. So I'd have to say that was the biggest surprise for me.
Isn't it just an interest? And I think maybe we do need to wrap it up. But isn't this a you know, paradox, contradiction, complexity? I mean, aren't we all just a bundle of those three things? Mm-hmm. You know, wrapped up in it's just you were thrown a curveball, and by the looks of it, you handled it really well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
I hope so.
Thanks again. And I've just got so many more questions, but we've been talking today on Face to Face with Patricia Markochian about her new film on CBC Docs, POV, Shut 'Em Down, The Rise of Jordan Peterson. And Patricia, just to be clear, it will be there for at least as of tonight, Friday, November the 2nd, will be there for two more years.
Yes, it'll be on cbc.ca/watch. It'll be streaming in Canada for 2 years. Yeah.
So look for it. Shut 'Em Down, The Rise of Jordan Peterson. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.